Hello and welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering podcast. In this podcast, I speak to adoptive parent Holly. She shares her family's experience of adoption and we focus on the impact on her biological child of the process. Holly was inspired to write a book to support children understanding why adopted children are unable to stay with their biological families, and you can find the details of that book in the podcast info. As always, if you have experience of adoption, fostering or special guardianship from any perspective and would like to share that on the podcast, please get in touch through the Facebook or Twitter page, or you can email us at andfpodcast@gmail.com.
So I am Holly Marlowe. I am an adoptive parent and biological parent. I've got a 5.5-year-old birth daughter. She'd be very upset if I didn't mention the half. It's very important to her. And I have a 2-year-old son who we adopted just over a year ago. He's been with us for 14 months. I've also recently written a book which I developed during the adoption process while my daughter was asking me lots of questions as 5-year-olds or 5.5-year-olds do. She's a very empathetic and inquisitive child, so she was very interested in why children can't always stay with their birth parents, and that was something I really wanted to nurture. So it's a wonderful trait, and so I think just very important that she maintains that empathy for them, because at some point I'm hoping her brother will want to meet his birth family again, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to keep in contact with them.
Yeah,
empathy will help.
Can I ask you then a little bit about your story, because it's not that normal for people to have biological and adopted children. It's not terribly unusual, but can you tell me a little bit about how that sort of came to pass and what brought you to adoption?
Sure. So I think it's always kind of been one of those things I thought I might do, adopting. A little naively at first, I volunteered in an orphanage in Africa when I was 17, and at the time I thought perhaps I would adopt one day, because seeing all those adorable children gave me that pull, that initial urge. But then I grew up, you know, I went to university and that sort of thing. Many years later, actually came to starting a family, and I thought, actually, I'd like to have a birth child as well. I'd like to experience both worlds. You know, having children is one of life's great adventures, and I figured it'd be quite different whichever way I did it. I actually naively thought that we would probably have 4 children, but as soon as I had one, I realised how exhausting children are, and there's no way I could have to 4. During my pregnancy, it was discovered that I have rhesus negative blood type, and a lot of women have this. I think it's something like 14%. Of the population has rhesus negative blood type, so probably 7% of them, or 14% of them, I suppose. Anyway, a lot of women have this, but usually it's kept under control by injections during pregnancy, so that, what can happen is your body can essentially develop antibodies to rhesus positive blood type and then try to destroy any babies with that blood type. And so my daughter was, the doctor told me it'll be fine, the first pregnancy is never affected, and then in future pregnancies we can give you injections to make sure that subsequent babies are fine too. But as it happened, my daughter actually was affected, and she wasn't terribly ill, but if she hadn't been given medication then she would have been, and she would have, my blood got into her bloodstream, and it would have likely given her brain damage, and it could have caused deafness, blindness and various other problems. And so it felt like we had a bit of a lucky escape, and that she was okay, but purely by chance that the doctors had picked up on it quickly enough. So I thought it just would be very irresponsible to take that risk again, especially when I'm already excited about the idea of adopting one day. We could just bring that forward. I was also realising at that time that I probably didn't want more than 2 children. I probably wouldn't be able to handle that many. Not as young as I was when I had 4 in mind.
How did you find the adoption process?
I really enjoyed it, actually. I've heard of a lot of people finding it really intense and stressful, and it was stressful in respect that it wasn't going fast enough for me, because I was so excited. And I found the wait quite hard. But I didn't find it terribly intrusive, as some people say it is. I thought our social workers were all really friendly and they put me at ease. The only time when I felt really frustrated was when we had our medical, and the doctor said to me that I would need to go and get a copy of my prescription to attach to this form. And that was the one point where I thought, you're going to say this is ridiculous. There's just so much admin involved. I mean, I know I have to be able to see because I drive and that sort of thing, but it just seemed really daft extra step that I had to prove it. But apart from that, it all makes perfect sense. You know, if you're adopting a child who's been through a traumatic background, I totally. I think it's great, actually, that they don't make it too easy and that you do have to answer a lot of questions and really show that you want to do it and that you understand what you're getting into.
Because obviously, I mean, part of the reason you got in touch was in relation to supporting your biological child. How did... I mean, were they sort of, let me think of the maths, were they sort of three, four-ish, that sort of age when you adopted, when you
were going
through the process?
Yeah.
And what was the process like for them, and how did you sort of support them through that process?
So my daughter was desperate for a baby brother or sister, because lots of her friends were becoming big brothers or big sisters through natural births around the same time. And she kept asking me why I didn't have a baby in my tummy. And initially, I just simplified it, saying that I can't have any more now. You know, it's a bit broken, sort of thing. I just couldn't. I did actually sometimes explain in more scientific detail because she was such an inquisitive child. But I simplified things, and then once my husband and I were sure that we definitely did want to adopt, we got a book, the Todd Parr Family Book. You probably heard of it. It's one of the big ones, the popular ones. And we just read about all different types of family there using that book. And on one page, it says some families adopt children. And so I explained what adoption is, and she immediately said, "Oh, let's do that. We can do that then." So I think she thought it was her idea, which was great. And I said, "Yeah, I would like to actually." And that was it. From then on, every day she said, "So when are we going to adopt a baby then?" So fortunately, the social worker was coming around the next week. So she felt like we were progressing quite quickly. And she loved it. Every time the social worker came, she'd come over and tell her, "I'm going to be a brilliant big sister, so you need to find me a baby brother or sister very soon." And she was giving her specifications as well, which was quite hilarious. And she was saying, "I'd like one called Rosie Posy, and she needs to be about this big and this colour hair and blah, blah, blah." And it changed every time, which was fortunate because we didn't end up adopting a Rosie Posy.
On the matching form, that could be problematic, couldn't it?
Quite limiting. Yeah, no, we ended up adopting a little boy, actually, but... fortunately, she's definitely happy with that too. But yeah, it was good. She really enjoyed the process, actually, and she wanted to be interviewed because then she felt like she was making it happen. That was good. The thing that she struggled with, though, was when we were talking to a social worker, it suddenly dawned on her that this baby would have come from a different family. And it was like her heart just broke at the thought of a baby not being able to stay with their birth parents, because she applied that to herself. And so, of course, she asked me, "Well, how do you know I won't be adopted one day?" So I was trying to explain why I know that I'm not going to have my children removed in a child-appropriate way, and also to help her to cope with that heartbreak, because wonderful that she's so empathetic, but I don't want her sobbing every day because she really feels for the birth family. I do want her to maintain a bit of that empathy, though. So I tried to find a book that would explain it to her, but all the books I looked at were really focusing on usually an animal. It's nearly always an animal in these children's books, but some little bird or squirrel or something, finding their family. And it's always either the little child finding their family or the birth parents finding their child. But I didn't find anything anyway. There may be some out there, I'm sure there will be, but I didn't find anything that said why they couldn't live with their birth parents. And I also wanted to write it in a certain way that I knew she would relate to and understand. So I thought, I'll do one myself. So I just wrote it on my phone initially, and then
I mean, just like, do you have a background in writing? Are you, I mean, are you a writer or?
Not at all, actually. I used to buy parts for tanks, so electronics for tanks, to make the windscreen wipers work and that sort of thing. So
all right.
Completely different.
Somewhat, yeah, that's yeah. Definitely a step change there for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I've written contracts and that sort of thing, but not stories at all. Mm-hmm. But it just sort of spilled out of me all the things that I wanted her to see in a book. I just wrote those down and edited it quite heavily over the next couple of days. But I read it to her in the first draft, and she said, okay, well, that makes sense. I understand. And she was quite glad that the social worker character, it's a goose, she was glad that Caring Goose had helped the birth parent initially, and she'd given advice, and so she felt like, okay, well, they did try to help. That's good. But she was still sad that in the end, the little chick couldn't stay with his birth mother. And I thought, well, actually, that's okay, because this isn't a happily ever after story. This is a book to help you process this. But it's okay if you do feel a little sad, but that's how that ended. Because it's just a tinge of sadness. It's not absolute sorry. but I think it would be a real disservice to the birth parents if I said, and Jenny Duck was fine. She lived happily ever after. She didn't mind that her little chick had been adopted, because that's not how birth parents are going to feel in real life. No. I don't know many birth parents, but the ones I do know, I'm not thrilled. You know, they're not fine.
Yeah.
Wrong, I think.
Yeah. So how did your daughter, I mean, was it a really useful tool for your daughter? And how did you go from there to kind of it being on your phone to it turning itself into a book? I'm kind of intrigued by this. I'm sure there's quite a few steps.
Definitely. Yeah. So it's really helped my daughter. So she'd been very emotional about it for quite a long time, and that helped her to process it. And then I was seeing in Facebook groups and on other forums like Twitter and that sort of thing, people were saying that their children were struggling with that question, either about themselves or about a sibling who was being adopted, usually about themselves though. And I thought, oh, I could use this. And one of my friends had a six-year-old who, I think he was five at the time actually, but he was adopted. And so I asked her what she thought of it, and she gave me some input. And I thought, oh, actually, I could make this into a book and maybe help some other people. So I asked my sister, who's an excellent artist, if she'd mind illustrating it for me. And she had a newborn at the time, so that it took quite a long time for her to have the free time to do all of that. And then, of course, I was on adoption leave with my son, so it then took me quite a long time to do anything with the illustrations that she gave me. But over the course of about a year, we managed to turn it into a book. And we used the Amazon Kindle platform. I didn't even really look at publishers, because I felt like it was so important to me that I wanted to do it myself.
Yeah.
And be in control of it.
So people can find it on, if they sort of Google it, what, give the full title again?
So it's Delly Duck, Why a Little Chick Couldn't Stay with His Birth Mother. And it's on Amazon. And it keeps popping up on other online bookshops every now and then for a while, but it's consistently on Amazon.
Oh, that's excellent. I mean, because I think increasingly we're seeing that the community of people who adopt are not the sort of the stereotypical infertile couples. I mean, that remains the majority, but there's a diversifying of people who are coming to adoption. So increasingly people do have their own biological children. And I'm conscious that it's something that we've never particularly looked at on a podcast, or something that we've never focused on really. But the process of adopting is one thing, you know, they're going through the application form, which is many families find that frustrating and laborious. So did you sort of protect your daughter from some of that, or did you kind of, how did you negotiate that? Because it's long-winded, isn't it? It's a long
time.
When you're three, you know, 6 months is a big chunk of your life.
Oh, so long, yeah. Well, we use a lot of empathy, so we just kept complaining together about how slow it was and how long it was taking.
Put it all in the social worker.
We're saying, you know, but we've got to get the right baby, and we don't want them to feel rushed, you know, that they have to find the right child who needs us. And I explained that it had to be a child who needs a big sister. And some children there will have some medical problems that mean that they need to just be an only child. Mm. And actually the first child whose profile we seriously looked at, we initially said yes to, and then it ended up that really he needed to be an only child, so we didn't progress with that one. But fortunately, I hadn't told my daughter about that. We waited to tell her we'd actually been matched when we'd formally been matched and it was all sorted. But I kept telling her that, you know, it needed to be the right child and the right one just wasn't available, wasn't there yet.
Because it's a life-altering decision for her as well, isn't it? It's quite a peculiar... And if you have a baby, you get what you're given in some respects, but the implications are lifelong for your daughter.
Definitely. And I think there was a bit more pressure there as well, because if we didn't have any biological children, I think we would have said we'd probably adopt siblings and we would have been open to a lot more disability-wise. But I felt a bit of pressure that we probably wouldn't be able to adopt a child who had a disability so severe that I'd have to give up my job and take them to a lot of medical appointments and, you know, that sort of thing. Or nothing too horrendous. It was fine in the end. But, and of course, you don't know when you've adopted the child anyway. They could end up with some sort of medical condition. But I thought there's a level of awareness I have to have of how it's going to impact her, because any child will be traumatized to an extent, and it's just going to be such a big change for her. So that was different.
And so it finally came to you found a match. And did you said you didn't, with the earlier match, that you'd not included her until things had got to a sort of more firm stage. Did you do the same again with your son?
Yeah. So I showed her a photo of him, the one photo that we'd been given at that stage, just after the matching panel, and said, hey, the social workers have contacted me and there's a baby we can adopt. And I showed her this photo and she just looked at it and she said, oh, he looks very jolly. And I was sort of waiting in suspense for more. And she said, oh, okay, all right. Do you want to play Barbies now?
What? <All right.
laughs> And then a few minutes later, she said, so can we just go and pick him up now? You know, I had to remind her, but we have to wait until... Well, actually, unfortunately, because of COVID, we had to wait for quite a long time. So we had some video calls with him first, and we then had a very gradual socially distanced intros process.
Because obviously all of a sudden these really complex needs start to emerge, don't they? You need to make a connection with the child, and they need to make a connection with you, but you've got your little girl in the midst of all that. I mean, obviously, you've never adopted before, so it is what it is. But tell me about your thinking about how, you know, the difficulties or the challenges that you maybe faced.
I definitely thought the intros were a lot more complicated having my daughter around, because she needed to come with us because of COVID, which I was actually glad of. The social workers had said to me, put her in nursery. But I couldn't do that because the foster family had some medical risks, and so we had to isolate, and putting her in nursery would have just brought more germs into our bubble. That made it a bit trickier, and it delayed the intros as well, so we had to isolate quite strictly for a while, all of us, which she found extremely hard, just not even going for a walk for 2 weeks. So we had a lot of garden toys in that fortnight. But the intros were great because there were other foster children in the family, slightly older, but there was a 9-year-old who played with her while we were bonding with our son.
Right.
So she could play with him a bit, but playing with the babies, slightly boring if you're 5 and a half and you don't want to get to.
Because normally you would sort of had the opportunity to meet your son on your own, kind of quite quiet and intense, but obviously having to bring your little girl along as well, and your mind's, like all parents, if your child's around, your head's, are they fine?
Yeah, it's definitely distracting. Yeah. And she found it quite emotional because she was used to being an only child. So whenever I cuddled him or said anything lovely to him, you know, like, oh, you're so cute, she was a bit heartbroken. Oh, do you think I'm cute still? You know, that sort of thing. So she was dealing with all of that in front of the foster family, which was tricky, but she did really well. And I think it was good for her that the foster family had other children she could play with and new toys, because she hadn't been anywhere for so long. It was like going to a soft play scene. They had a trampoline and different toys to us. And
that's excellent.
That's helpful. Yeah, that's really helpful. Yeah,
lots of distracting children to have around. And so the introductions went okay. I mean, normally they're sort of, what, 10 days, was it?
Give or take? Yeah, it was, we had a few, I think we had about 4 weeks of socially distanced, just picnics. And we actually met him on his birthday, his first birthday, which was really strange not being able to cuddle him. And it's been fantastic this year that we could actually cuddle him the whole day on his birthday. So yeah, 4 weeks of socially distanced intros, and then the face-to-face stuff started.
What socially distanced intros, that I'm not sure I even know what that means. Is that use of looking at him through a glass window? And
That was outside. Thankfully, it was the summer. So we were sitting on different benches in the foster carer's garden, which hopefully is huge. So we were a few metres away from each other, and trying to look like fun people, holding toys that were fun enough that he'd think we're fun people, but not fun enough that he'd be upset that he couldn't hold them.
It's a really fine line to dance
on,
isn't
it? Yeah. So I got him a toy phone, and I brought one the same for my daughter, and they were pretending to chat to each other on the phone and that sort of thing, which was very sweet. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was hard for the foster carer to keep him happy, just sitting in one place for an hour at a time.
And yeah,
one year olds don't want to do that.
No, it's not reasonable to ask a one-year-old to do that, is it? With this limited attention span. And then you went to physical introductions and then moved home. So what's that like, coming home after all of that after all that busyness, then to kind of go back into a COVID world? Was just
just the four of us. It was quite strange, and I think the COVID side of it had affected him, because he wasn't used to meeting other people. So the first people he'd seen in months took him home. So we found that whenever the supermarket delivery person came or the postman came, he panicked, and I think it felt like he was worried they were going to take him. So that was quite strange to deal with, and I think COVID had a lot to do with that. I'm sure there's probably some of that anyway with general adoption intros, but he'd literally seen nobody outside of the foster family really till he moved in with us. So we tried going on walks, and he was very nervous about strangers, but that improved gradually, thankfully. And we just had to have a lot of picnics and just hang out, the four of us. It was nice in a way that we had our own little bubble, but we were glad after a few weeks when we could see more extended family again. And I wanted to introduce him to everyone, because he's a wonderful little boy.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been... I guess I'm thinking of your little girl as well, who's by this time, what, 4 or 5, and it must have been quite an intense period for her as well. Did you see any sort of, I don't want you to lay any ugly things bare, but, was it difficult for her? Was it, were there challenges? And
yeah, definitely challenging at first. Yeah, she found it particularly hard that we had to structure the day around his naps. Because she didn't nap anymore, so we could only go out at certain times of day, and we had to sometimes leave the park or time the picnic in a certain way so that we could be back home for his nap, because otherwise he'd be very sad and we don't want that. And so she was a bit fed up about that at first, so I was trying to find other reasons why we had to go home, and not say that it's because of him. Don't want to put the blame on him. And I also tried to baby her a little bit so that she wouldn't feel like being a baby is the only thing, that we loved him more because he's a baby. Because, of course, we were making a big fuss at him and trying to make him feel really loved and being really lovely to him. I'm very excited to have him. I kept telling her she'd always be my baby, that sort of thing. And I think that helped. But there was definitely a bit of jealousy at first, which perhaps we would have experienced. Anyway, I don't know, but
it's a well-worn path, isn't it? Older siblings. My mother was telling me a story yesterday of how my brother, I've got an older brother, after about a year, he sort of said, I love my brother very much, but, it'd be much better if he was an ornament. And so I think every older child has probably had that experience of sort of being slightly, their world shaken up by this arrival of this new child. And so how is it now? I mean, you're a year on, has the adoption order gone through? And
yes, the adoption order's all gone through, thankfully. My daughter was extremely excited about that, actually. It was adorable. And I said to her, he's a Marlowe now. He's got the same surname as us. And she was absolutely thrilled. She grabbed my arms and made me dance around the kitchen in a circle. And then she ran over to him and said, you're a Marlowe, you're a Marlowe. And I don't think he had any idea of what that meant, but he found it very exciting too. So he ran around shouting, I'm a Marlowe. Which is very sweet. Because of course they've got no concept of the other side of it, which is that he's no longer the surname he was before. And that's sad that the GM didn't put that on them. So they enjoyed that. Celebrating that was wonderful. And they're so close now, it's wonderful. She goes to school and she brings him home something that she's created most days. And she'll come in and she'll kind of build up suspense and she'll say, what's in my book bag today? And he'll jump up and down and squeal with excitement and she'll pull out some. She'll draw a teddy and cut it out for him, or she'll make a ball from some sparkly fabric that she found and tape it all together and that sort of thing. So we've got a basket now of these things that she's created that he doesn't really play with very much, but he's just so excited to receive them. And it's nice that she's got them while she's there. So.
Oh, that's sweet. So what about yourself? And, you know, your adoption leave, has that come to an end? Are you have you aspired back to work, or are you?
So my adoption leave was going to end in July, and my work actually contacted me and said that they were looking to make redundancies and they were asking for volunteers. So I volunteered so that I could finish writing my book, and I've got a few other ideas for more books. So it was quite a leap of faith, really.
Yeah.
Quite different to anything I've done before. But yeah, so I've left that world now and I'm an author. And it's great because I have much more time with my son. And I feel like I was, you know, I missed the first year, so I want to get more time to look up for that. And more time with my daughter too, actually. Now she's finishing school early, so.
Yeah, I think it's, I was fortunate that my circumstances meant that I was home. I was like a home parent for a while when my children were very little. And I think that at the time it was not necessarily the circumstances I'd wished for, but actually on reflection, it was just a wonderful opportunity to get to know my kids, really. And them to get to know me, I suppose. And so thinking about the books then, have you got a specific focus? Are you going to be all in on adoption and fostering and this kind of world, or are you going to diversify?
I think certainly the first 10 books that I keep thinking 10. Of more books I want to write, and the first 10 are all adoption and fostering based. But I've had friends ask me if I could write books about specific things that their children have faced, medical issues. So I'll probably do those at some point as well when I feel that I understand the condition enough to be able to write something helpful.
Wow.
I think adoption fostering would be the primary.
So you're an author for hire. You'll accept any, you know. Any,
I'll do favors for friends who need therapeutic any serious stories.
Well, that's fantastic. It sounds like things are going really well. It sounds wonderful. And it sounds like, you know, just even from this idea of trying to support your own daughter, this kind of cottage industry is sort of emerging, isn't it? That's wonderful. So thank you so much for your time, and really appreciate you sharing your story and kind of being open and honest about the sort of the your family.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
No worries. Bye-bye.
Bye.